I'd like to call to order the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study sessions November 1st, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivey.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven members present. Councilmember Nicholson is joining us virtually. I move to go into executive session with, Mr. Standish, would you read the item, please?
Pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 for discussion and consideration of records exempt from public inspection, the records to be discussed are the minutes from the following executive sessions, May 19th, 2021, October 5th, 2022, and July 19th, 2023.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. I move to go into executive session with the town manager, deputy town manager, town attorney, legal services director, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? Councilmember Bowen?
A question for the vice mayor who brought forth this item. What is the reason for the three dates that were chosen?
Sure. Thank you, Councilmember Bowen. There were four times when the during executive session when potential negotiations for a marketplace EDA occurred. And these are the final three of those four, which is when this council was the body that was seated. So that's the nexus related to the three items.
And the question for the town manager, as the agenda item is stated right now, both the background and fiscal impact are both listed as NA, which I assume is not applicable. Is that correct? Is there any reason why that's correct? There's no applicability fiscally, nor there's any background involved?
Mr. Wilkins, I don't believe your microphone is on in your response.
There would be no fiscal impact related to today's conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Those are my questions.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, I have a question. It's my understanding that several town residents received an invitation to this meeting incorrectly, and I'd like to know how that occurred. Apparently, some council member forwarded them notice and inadvertently invited them, and they had to be uninvited.
Council member Solomon, I don't know that the agendized item is regarding the minutes. I don't know that it's appropriate to talk about conduct that happened afterwards within the agendized item as it is agendized.
Well, I had a lot of residents very concerned as to why they were being invited specifically to this meeting, and I'd like to know how that occurred.
If you'd like to know how that occurred, I would suggest creating a separate agenda item for a future meeting, Council Member Solomon.
I'd be happy to.
Okay. Any additional discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Good evening, everyone. We'll resume our regular and study session. We convened our regular session earlier at 5 o'clock for the Oro Valley Town Council, November 1st, 2023. We're reconvening at 6:14 p.m. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivey.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven members of council present. I'd like to make the following motion. Based on discussion from July 19th, 2023, item two, executive session discussion, town attorney will read the following statement. I need a second motion.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Rothschild.
The statement is as follows. due to public statements which have been made, which have caused confusion about the proposal for a public-private partnership between the town and the developer of the Oro Valley Marketplace, the council would like to share the following items from the July 19, 2023, item 2 council session that discussed this issue. The town granted zoning entitlements for 532 apartment units and hotels. Recreational open space for the apartments was partially to be satisfied by a central common area. The total cost of the project was estimated at least $9.5 million. The developer wanted their contribution capped at $3 million. The town would also be responsible for taking over and maintaining an acre of grass and some infrastructure. The town council did not believe the common area improvements justified the cost to the town and declined to enter into this agreement.
Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Historic Preservation Commission will hold their next meeting on November 6th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the Planning and Zoning Commission will hold their next meeting on November 7th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then there will be a neighborhood meeting for the Avia at Rancho Vistoso East and West on November 9th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Then the Water Utility Commission will meet next on November 13th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold their next meeting on November 14th at 6 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the next Town Council regular session is scheduled for November 15th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We have some council reports this evening. We'll begin with Councilmember Jones Ivey, and she'll recognize Bradley Allen, homeschooled ninth grader, that's with us this evening. Brady Allen. Sorry, Brady.
This is another exciting opportunity for me to introduce one of our community's finest. And so it's my honor to introduce you to Brady Allen, an exceptional young man who is a homeschooled ninth grader. Brady goes above and beyond the average 15-year-old, and we're here to celebrate his dedication to his academics, athletics, and his extracurricular activities. Brady truly enjoys learning and goes beyond his daily educational requirements by tasking himself with other non-required curriculum and educational workshops, specifically in his favorite subject, math. As a ninth grader, Brady is also a member of the Ironwood Ridge High football team, where he was invited to play for the varsity team as a defensive lineman and has even been part of the starting lineup. Congratulations. Brady is also hoping to play baseball with Ironwood Ridge, the sport he has played since he was 6 years old. Brady has played baseball for both Little League and club teams, earning over 30 championships. The best thing about Brady is his heart. This young man is always available to help anyone, anywhere, anytime. This was recognized by Wilson K through 8, where he was given the Benz Bell Award. He has volunteered for multiple charitable organizations and helps collect donations for interfaith community services. Brady, congratulations. We're so proud of you as our spotlight on youth, and I just can't wait to see what the future holds.
Now, Yeah, come on up, Mom and Dad. Brady, I cannot believe that you're a ninth grader. When I was in the ninth grade, I was 4'11 and 98 pounds. I wrestled the 98 weight class. I could only dream of looking like that. Thank you for joining us tonight, Mom and Dad. Great job. Councilmember Jones-Ivey has a big surprise here for us this evening.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And continuing on, Project Grad is having their fundraiser, and it's called the Oral Valley Cup. Please mark your calendars for February 2nd, 2024. This fundraiser is for AMFI, CDO, and Ironwood Ridge High School to help raise funds for Project Grads. They are in desperate need of volunteers. And so Tony Hurst is your contact person. Please, please, let's show our young people some love and support in their efforts. You can contact Tony at Tony, T-O-N-I, Park, P-A-R-K, Hurst, H-U-R-S-T, at live.com. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a couple of reports from this last couple of weeks. First of all, we had the opportunity to attend the State of the Town, and it was really wonderful, a sold-out crowd of, I was told, around 700, if that's correct, and put on by the Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce, sponsored by Lisa Bayless, and I don't want to name too many more names or else I'm sure I'll forget someone, but the mayor did an excellent job delivering his speech on the state of the town, so I just wanted to report on that and congratulate you, Mr. Mayor, on another good year in state of the town.
Thank you.
Next, I had the opportunity to attend the police department's Safe Treats National Night Out with our police department and our other first responders, the Golder Ranch Fire District. We had FBI, Border Patrol, and other agents there. It was held in the Walmart parking lot and sponsored by Walmart. And it was really a great event. We had a lot of kids there. It was well attended. The weather was excellent. Our volunteers for our police department were out in force handing out treats to our children. And I had the opportunity to attend with my family, and that was always a good event. I enjoy that every year. And then next, I just wanted to report that I had the opportunity to go trick-or-treating last night with my family, and as usual, the neighborhoods in Oro Valley were hopping, and I want to thank the community for safe and successful trick-or-treating. One thing that is special about having a holiday in Oro Valley is that safe feeling where kids are able to just kind of walk around, and we have our police department coming around delivering candy and checking on everyone, and so I've seen that occurring as well. So I just want to thank the community for that as well, because I heard a lot of good things from the community about that. So thanks.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Councilmember Green.
Oro Valley is an incredible place to live. I mean, from the young man that we just were introduced to the mayor's talk about the town, it's just unbelievable. But one of the things I'm really proud of is shown in this slide. And they have created on the west side of La Cañada a multi-use path that is absolutely beautiful. And the part that's in the foreground here makes it usable by anyone with an ADA issue, which is great. So I'm just so proud of them. KENG has done it. And it should be opened up next week. So congratulations.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, I just wanted to mention a lot of people probably know 2 weeks ago on the 15th, we had the Rockin' for Heroes event, which was once again held in Oro Valley, celebrating our first responders, police, and military. The initial release, or the first video just came out, was attended by close to 3,000 people. So we're going to roll about a minute of that video.
That roar you heard overhead, ladies and gentlemen, that's the sound of freedom, and we are thankful that they're there.
We decided to create an event where we could honor all these people at once, so that's why we created Rockin' for Heroes.
First thing we want to do is to acknowledge our first responders.
Because that's what this is about. It's about recognizing and supporting all the heroes that are out there in the shadows that we don't see until we absolutely need them.
To pay tribute to the group that served our son and our son PJ, who we lost to osteosarcoma July of 2020.
We are honored to be joined today by representatives from all of Southern Arizona law enforcement.
It's an amazing event, and what makes it extra special is it's hosted here, right here in Oro Valley at James D. Creek Park. And we look forward to it continuing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Solomon. I wanted to tag on to the Vice Mayor on the National Night Out. And especially I wanted to give a shout out to Officer Michael Kleinberg, who led the planning for that event, which was really remarkable. And of course, many of the officers and our volunteers helped with that, as well as other jurisdictions. I wanted to let you know that Officer Kleinberg and others were there until 2 a.m. that morning, breaking all of that down. It's a huge effort that requires, you know, the full day. They're there that evening, but it goes well beyond that. And then I was at an event, a town event, on Saturday evening, the Halloween Spooktacular, and there were about 5,000 residents and guests at that event. And who was there but Officer Kleinberg with... And then the next day, he was at Dispose of Med. So Officer Kleinberg is just incredible, and he's representative of our entire department. I also want to give a shout-out to Dylan Hyatt of the Parks and Rec Department, who led up the that very successful Halloween Spooktacular. A lot of happy kids that evening. So thank you for those reports, Council. Mr. Wilkins will present his report at this time.
Just a few items. It was mentioned the State of the Town, very successful event. The full video and transcript will be on our website within the next couple of weeks, so you can grade it yourself. A few upcoming events over the next few weeks, Friday night concerts at Steam Pump. This Friday is Midnight Auto Band. Movies on the Lawn on Saturday the 4th is Moana. Then at Steam Pump Ranch, the second Saturdays on the 11th, we're having a bike swap event. So you can bring in your bike, sell it, trade parts and such. So a unique event this coming up. Also like to welcome some new businesses to town. Arizona Design and Construction, Aspirational Wealth Management, Beck Legacy Group, BFT or Body Fit Training, and Harbor Freight. Those are all on Oracle Road. Then we have Hazlitt Insurance on McGee, and Golder Ranch Fire District Administration Building. They're moving their location over to Hanley Boulevard. So,
thank you, Mr. Wilkins. There's no shortage of things to do in the town of Oro Valley. Okay. We'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, Mayor and Council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. When you come forward to speak, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Tim Fagan.
My name is Tim Fagan. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. My wife and I built our house at 9510 Calle Buena Vista 32 years ago. We were attracted by the large lots, the zoning for farms and ranches, the wildlife, We've had coyotes, bobcats, javelina on our lot, and the terrific views and the dark skies. The OVCN proposed rezone is totally incompatible with that. There's other places they could build. They could buy property and build that would not affect the neighborhood so much. The other thing is they could try working with other entities that have facilities. There's quite a few football and soccer fields around town, and the new Marana enclosed sports facility would provide for basketball, and there's also an aquatic facility if they were interested in doing that. So they really, and it would cost them a lot less. And so I think that, that's something that they should try to do. Thank you.
Tim Terrace.
I like the T-shirt.
Somebody in the town gave this to me. I like T-shirts. My name is Tim Terrace. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members and town staff, thank you. Lately, the world news has been very grim with labor strife, warfare, and even mass shootings. Very sad, to say the least. However, as I read farther into the news, I learned of a very positive program commencing in nearby Marana. The headline read, Marana Community and Aquatic Center design nears completion. According to the Town of Marana Parks and Recreation Master Plan 2020-30, interest in a multi-generational community center and aquatic facility was expressed throughout the community as a high priority. Since then, with community and stakeholder feedback in the form of surveys, public outreach events, and focus groups, the town has reached a clear vision of what to provide in the facility. The design consists of a 60,000-square-foot community center and a 48,000-square-foot outdoor aquatic center located near the Marana Municipal Complex. The community center, and bear with me, they got a lot of stuff in here, will include three full-size courts, striped for basketball, volleyball, and pickleball, an indoor three-lane elevated track fitness loft with equipment that offers diverse exercise options, fitness group studios, community rooms, child watch team, gaming room, lounge areas, shared locker rooms with the aquatic center, administration and support spaces. The aquatic center will include a 25-yard competition pool with 10 swim lanes and diving well, a recreation pool with zero-edge entry, water resistance channel, pool slides, play features, sun decks, shade canopies, rentable ramadas and cabanas, event lawn space, pool pump, and storage rooms. Wow, that's a lot of stuff. The Marana Community and Aquatic Center will be a year-round family-friendly facility providing opportunities for health, wellness, and community engagement for all ages and fitness levels while continuing to drive traffic to the developing downtown area. Construction for the Marana Community and Aquatic Center is slated to begin this summer with the targeted public opening date of spring 2025. Congratulations to Marana for conceiving and delivering a residential supported facility at the right time and the right place to serve the area. Well done. Thank you.
Anthony Ferrara.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council Members, my name is Anthony Ferrara, and I am a resident of Oro Valley. I, too, want to speak about the proposed rezone that will come before you again by the Church of Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. The project, as it's scoped right now, is completely incompatible with the neighborhood. It was a residential piece of property, and it should continue to remain a piece of residential property in the heart of a neighborhood. The project, as it's slated right now, would do permanent and irreparable harm to the neighborhood. Thank you.
Bonnie Quinn.
Good evening. My name is Bonnie Quinn. I'm a 25-year resident of Oro Valley. I'd like to acknowledge the town and its contribution to Rockin' for Heroes, and specifically Mayor Winfield for contributing to the event and greeting our attendees, and Councilman Green for serving as a community advisor for Rockin' for Heroes, of which I am a founder. I also need to recognize Golder Ranch Fire District and Oro Valley Police Department, who provided the incredible, compassionate, and professional care to our son PJ, and were the reason it was placed on our heart to thank and honor these first responders. We just had our annual concert event at James D. Krieg Park, and we tripled our attendance in this, our third year. We had more families, more food trucks, more support, more enthusiasm, more heroes present, more volunteers, and lots of firsts. We had a two-jet flyover, the addition of a 10-piece string section from Tucson Symphony Orchestra. We had beautiful new event programs this year that did justice to our event. We even had a new two-year grant from Pima County Attractions and Tourism. We welcomed approximately 3,000 attendees this year. For those who had not pre-registered, we simply asked at the entry gate, "Are you from inside or outside Pima County?" 40% of our attendees came from outside Pima County. Over 10% of people were from out of the state, and they stayed at the Hilton or other hotels in Oro Valley. Next year is the 50th anniversary of Oro Valley. My husband Michael and I saw the Northwest Explorer article last week about how Oro Valley envisions celebrating this 50th anniversary. They want to play up the number 50, like 50 fun things to do in Oro Valley. What a great idea. Guess what? Rockin' for Heroes is now one of those events that's fun. We are truly a grassroots effort, all volunteers. We want to keep it a free event so there are no barriers of entry, and we rely on private and corporate support and a good working relationship with the town we hold it in. We want to keep growing, but with growth comes more considerations, more expenses to maintain a level of quality and safety that attendees have come to expect. Just as Pima County sees the value in Rockin' for Heroes, we hope Oro Valley does too, not just financially, but with a sense of pride as one of many great reasons to live here for all residents. And let's not forget the immeasurable value this brings to our heroes who protect and serve us. Oro Valley is a good place to be a police officer or a firefighter. No community in Arizona celebrates them like we do. Three successful events show that Rockin' for Heroes has staying power. We've planted and sowed the seeds of a great annual musical celebration to honor our heroes. We give everyone a chance to publicly say thank you to them, and they're coming out to do it 3,000 strong. It's the intention of everyone on our executive committee to grow this event each year, both in duration and size, while staying within Pima County. We need to be aligned with a town that will get behind this event and will work in tandem with us to ensure the best experience possible. We truly hope that's Oro Valley. It's where we live. It's where this event has started, and we want to keep it here. Thank you for your consideration. Appreciate it.
I have no other blue cards. I'll close the call to audience. In reviewing the agenda this evening, I would like to make one adjustment. We have two presentations. Right now, the second is a presentation of the 26th Annual Oro Valley Community Academy graduates, and I'd like to place that first. We have a report on the community's new 10-year action plan. Any concerns about making that change? All right, so Mr. Standish, item two of presentations.
Presentation of the 26th Annual Oro Valley Community Academy graduates.
Thank you. And planner Ms. Chavez will present this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, Council. My name is Alex Chavez, and I had the pleasure of hosting the 26th Annual Community Academy this year, along with Principal Planner Malini Sims. We were excited that we had 45 registrants that joined us this year. We learned a variety of topics that we have here listed on the screen. And what we found was this year's class was very engaged. We had very dynamic conversations about a lot of the elements that makes Oro Valley unique, and our participants got a better understanding of how town governance works and the services that we offered, and walked away with a better understanding of the town and invoked its spirit to participate in additional avenues with the town through maybe the Board of Commission or any of those other items as well. So this is a great opportunity. And so from those 45 participants that joined online or in person, 39 completed all of the requirements to graduate. And so we're here to recognize their time, and we have a certificate to show that appreciation. So if I may have you, Mr. Mayor, and Mr. Wilkins come join us down here to present the certificates. All righty, thank you so much. So I'll call out your name if you can come join us and line up here, and then we'll take a one last group photo, and then we'll hold on tight, and then Melini will lead you over to the Hopi room afterwards. So first, Richard Bachmeyer. Okay. Alrighty, Michael Burns.
Mr. Mayor, congratulations.
Very much. Thank you so much for participating.
Tony D'Angelo. Pamela Davis. Lori Freet.
Congratulations.
All righty. Jay Hilmer and Linda Hilmer. Cozy. Alrighty. Patricia Yeager.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Tom Karenberg.
Okay. Good job.
I'll go right over here. Thank you, Patricia. All right. Bob Keller. Beth Linholt. Linholt, pardon.
You guys are hiding out of the picture.
All righty. Gail Lopez. Okay. Mario Medina, if you're here. Matthew Miller. Patty Olson. Franklin Roth. We have Patrick Silva and Ann Silva. Alrighty.
Jim Scalecki. Yeah. Ready, Marla Smith. James Stacy. All righty, Bill Van Dam. All righty, and Sandra Wilson. And last but certainly not least, Phil Zielinski. All righty, folks, let's practice for Thanksgiving photos and get crunched together here.
Here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
We're going to get everyone this side of the dais.
All righty. If we could go over to the left side of the dais.
So we're gonna go even further.
There was one that didn't show up,
yeah.
And so yeah, we realized we're gonna go to dinner, so we'll switch it.
Can I get this group to move more to this side, so I'm not gonna see anything past this? I know it's crowded. I need the last five of you to squeeze even more. Thank you.
Can we get on our knees? We want somebody low.
We won't need that. So from the orange shirt.
Okay. Jay and Linda.
You four, I'm going to need to move this way. I can't see anything past here. Thank you.
We'll pretend we're running.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, we did it. We got everyone. And can we fill in right here a little bit? We'll bring you guys up. Yeah, that's perfect. Okay, here we go. 3, 2,
whiskey.
1. And one more. 3, 2, 1. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And that was fun. Can we get up? Did we do this too?
Yeah.
The class did this?
It was a tough class.
Grab a seat and go over in about 10 minutes.
Have a seat and then we'll go through that and we'll wait. Oh, okay.
All right. Well done, everybody. Anybody have a World Series score? 0-0. Thank you. Okay. What inning?
Six.
Bottom of the sixth. Okay. We'll go to presentation one, Mr. Standish.
Progress report on the community's new 10-year action plan known as OV's Path Forward.
All right. Exceptional principal planner, Ms. Sims, will present this item. I just have to say about Ms. Sims, you know, all these different community events that we've had, Ms. Sims has been there along with Renee, and I don't know Renee's last name, but it's been incredible, the outreach that Malini is doing. So
thank
we
you.
Really appreciate your hard work. Yeah.
Amen.
You're
thank
awesome.
You, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Well, on that note, I am here to provide some important information about OV's Path Forward, and this is the community's next 10-year plan. And first and foremost, I actually want to thank you, Mayor Winfield, for announcing the launch of this community-driven process during your State of the Town speech. Before I provide some more specifics, though, I would also like to play a short video about the project.
Oro Valley is a unique community that cares about quality of life and the things that make this place we call home so special. When people come together to have conversations, collaborate, share ideas, and listen to one another, we better understand how to move our town forward. One of the community's most important efforts is the creation of a 10-year plan that outlines what our residents value and provides guidance on the town's actions. That's where you come in. It's time to plan together and chart Oro Valley's path forward, and your participation is essential. Why participate? Establishing OV's path forward starts with you, and the plan will come from the many voices throughout our community. It will reflect your values, goals, and priorities for Oro Valley. The 10-year plan holds the town accountable to achieving meaningful results, and we are on our way to fulfilling 100% of the community's priorities from the last general plan, such as park and community center improvements, protection of large saguaros, excellent public safety, and increased transparency of town services. So, let's kickstart the conversation to plan OV's path forward. Join us online or out in the community at your favorite restaurants, events, or shops. We want to hear from you. Tell us, what do you like most about Oro Valley? What are Oro Valley's greatest challenges over the next 10 years? What do you think Oro Valley should be known for? Let your voice be heard and learn more at ovpathforward.com. The path to Oro Valley's future starts here.
All right. So preparations for this kickoff started back with in January with the community, and this was through a townwide survey as well as a resident advisory group who created an award-winning community engagement plan. Now, this community engagement plan really lays out the tools and the methods that we will use to reach out and encourage all community members to participate. It also includes guiding principles, or the must-dos, if you will, such as having an inclusive and accessible process. These principles will help establish community ownership and engagement, both of which are critical to creating a plan that stays relevant over a 10-year time frame, but also reflects the community's vision, values, and goals. So several steps have been taken to make sure the process prioritizes residents and is accessible and inclusive for all community members. This includes creating a series of background reports with associated videos for everyone to learn more about topics that are important in this community, such as public safety, housing, and the environment, as well as more topics. I do encourage everyone to read the reports or watch the videos, but most importantly, to join the discussions and let us know your ideas and perspectives on these topics. They will be published monthly and throughout March. The most recent event or effort for this launch was creating a project identity that was simple and memorable, but also invokes accountability, community, collaboration, and the environment. So I want to thank all the resident advisory group members who really helped create the OV Path Forward branding. And this branding was used to create materials to get ready for community events, as well as an interactive website that people can use. We really want to make sure that participation is easy, fun, and convenient for everyone. And then lastly, staff's role in this process is truly coordination. We're going to be coordinating people and information. We really rely on the community to help spread the word and gather ideas from their neighbors or organizations that they are part of. So recruiting volunteers will be an ongoing process to make sure all demographics and areas of Oro Valley are aware of the project and invited to participate. This launched the beginning of a 3-year process for community participation, and community outreach is the top priority during this first phase, and the results from everyone's responses and ideas will be used to update the community's vision and values for the future. This phase we're in right now will set the foundation for the rest of the plan, so it's really important that everyone gets involved. which I still can't emphasize enough, apparently. But there are multiple opportunities to share ideas by joining the broader conversation, answering those three questions you heard in the video and as well shown on the screen, or having those focused conversations about topics that folks are interested in. And ovpath4.com is a one-stop destination for folks to learn more about the project, discuss, connect, and collaborate with other community members. It's also a great way to see results of this effort. So I encourage everyone to go online and register on the site to stay up to date about the opportunities to get involved. This is one of many updates that we will be providing to Town Council. Throughout this process, we will be updating the council, as well as all the boards, commissions, and especially the Youth Advisory Council, on the information that's being shared from the community through these discussions online in the community, as well as a townwide survey, which will launch early next year. And, of course, the results of the community's efforts will be the updated vision and guiding principles. So some information that we have received to date is shown on the screen. You just recognized the Community Academy participants, and I want to thank them because they were also the first to participate in this process. So as just a pitch for future Community Academies, you get to do some of the first if you join Community Academy. But since their class, we've also received feedback from the state of the town, as well as a couple of events, and have received just under 300 responses to date. Some early themes include that there's a high value in Oro Valley for our natural beauty, safety, as mentioned earlier, and there's a great sense of community here. Some considerations for the future are to plan for water and traffic, and also to keep having things to do in Oro Valley, especially for families and kids. Now, we're going to continue to expand on these themes as we go out for more events and through the online discussions. And again, we'll be updating the council as we receive more input. So lastly, I encourage everyone to make sure their voice is heard by either going online to the website, or you can also follow OV Path Forward on Facebook or Instagram. You can also find the OV Path Forward booth, which looks like the one on the screen, out in the community, and make sure you add your sticky note. We will be along the loop this Sunday at La Cunada and Lambert, just by the bridge, from 8 to 11 a.m., and then next Saturday, we'll be at the bike and swap that was mentioned earlier, and then Sunday at Big Wash Trailhead. We will continue to be adding events and have booths at local businesses and places in Oro Valley. So please register. Let us know if you have a favorite place in Oro Valley. Let us know. We'd love to be there. We really want to make sure this is an inclusive and accessible process. So that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. Really appreciate that. Council, any questions, comments? Vice Mayor?
I just wanted to comment that I really enjoyed that video, and I think that the branding that you've come up with is great. I really appreciate all the public outreach and engagement with our citizens, volunteer groups, and et cetera. On that national night out, my kids put their post-its, and they wrote, "I love everything about Oro Valley," or everything, or something like that. So we're big fans of Oro Valley here in our family, and so that was fun for them to have the chance to participate in that. So thanks for making the effort, and I think I agree, just to try to continue to make that effort to reach every part of our community is fabulous. I know you're doing that. Thank you.
Nick, did you have a hand in the video?
Small one.
I think you're being modest.
He's yeah. In the booth.
Though. Yeah, he's in the booth, and he does a great job producing videos for the town. Let's see, Malini, do you know how many people have registered so far at ovpathforward.com?
So we've had about 10 to 15 registrants, and then we have about 300 views. So we have more press hitting this week and next week, so we expect a big spike after that.
Okay, so here's the invitation. If you haven't signed up, go home and sign up at ovpathforward.com. Get registered. Stay in the loop. Okay, thank you so much, Ms. Sims. We'll go to the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to the regular agenda. Item 2, Mr. Standish.
Resolution number R23-42, discussion of possible action regarding Town of Oro Valley sponsorship policies for community events and tourism events and delegations of authority that allow the town manager to sign sponsorship agreements.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Community and Economic Development Director, Mr. Melcher, will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Melcher.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Mayor and council, I don't have another specific presentation related to the sponsorship policies since there wasn't extensive changes during the work session. I've provided the two drafts attached to the resolution. I just wanted to make the one note that legal had requested that we include the phrase specifically in both policies that designated the signing authority for the town manager. It was originally to be captured in the title, but we wanted to have it in both areas to make sure that it was searchable both under title and as part of the policy. So that was the only change made. So in short, the two policies represent what was presented at the study session.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. I move to approve resolution number R23-42, approving the community event and tourism sponsorship policies and delegate authority to the town manager to sign sponsorship agreements.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
I know we had a lot of discussions during the study session, and we were talking about issues about there was originally a limit of 3 times sponsorship and a $2,500, I think, max. I'm just concerned that we have flexibility in it for events, and I think a great example is the Rockin' for Heroes that is growing every year, has received commitments from Pima County and from private sponsorships, is that if the town deems it, and once again, I'll just use it as an example because we just had an event that we feel is worthy and we want to give X amount of money, particularly one like this that's associated to tourism, how much flexibility does this allow us? Or is it something that staff would need to come back to council and say, we think this is a good event, it's going to generate tourism dollars, and we recommend going outside of the policy or the ordinance in this manner?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Solomon, if you'll recall, we had two designations for sponsorships, one for community and one for tourism. As we work and discuss the results of the events, Rockin' for Heroes was the example I provided, and they were here tonight. If that transitions to a tourism event where we understand if the data bears out that there are a number of participants from out of town, if it expands into a 2-day event, something else that is a draw to create booked room nights, then we would transition that event from a community event over to a tourism event, and that would then provide us the flexibility to provide the sponsorships at a level commensurate with the return that we would expect on that sponsorship. And that would not have a cap on it, except for the budgetary authority that council provides through the budget.
And would, you know, their report of 40% being from outside of Pima County, would that be getting to the criteria of a tourism event?
It would, because one of the elements that we review is the estimated number of booked room nights that the event would produce.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilmember Green, did you?
Yeah, I like that change, Paul. I like the fact that you can look at what's happening and say it's more of a this than it was before, and we can look at it. And I also like the idea of the town manager being able to sign off on it. I think that's a good idea as well. Thank you.
Any more questions? Councilmember Bowen?
In reviewing the policies again, really like them. I could see how they were generated by the same author. They're structured in the same way, and that creates a real ease of use. Also appreciate the fact that you made them searchable, because in 2023, I really appreciate all the information the town has available to us to go into the website. But I think a new user might be frustrated about how difficult it is to search for things. And I'm just reminding myself for the next budget time to ask IT, why can't we search for things like we just get used to in all other areas of our life? And I'd like to understand the technical difficulties and see if there's a way forward. But if we don't bring this up, like you have, then we forget. So I'm grateful that you made it searchable. Maybe I'll hit on it one day. So thank you, Paul.
Thank you. I really appreciate the feedback and the comments.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Paul, when will we have a final copy? I'm looking at the general requirements, eligibility criteria, and conditions for our policy, the tourism sponsorship policy.
Right. Mayor and Councilmember Jones-Ivey, once the town council approves it, then these two sponsorship policies will convert from draft to final.
So, Mr. Melcher, since this is a new policy that we're putting in place, we've had some programs in the queue, so to speak. Does this go into effect now, and this is the policy going forward, or how are we managing that?
So, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We've been using these as the best practices anyway, in terms of how we've been looking at the qualifications to sponsor events. So we've taken those best practices, converted them into the policy. So in effect, what you're seeing is what we've been practicing moving up toward the presentation of the policies to town council.
Okay. All right. Seeing no additional questions, motion on the table. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Any future agenda items? Okay, hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Let's go into study session. So we'll call the study session to order. Mr. Standish, item one of the study session.
Presentation and discussion regarding a proposed zoning code amendment to allow mobile food unit courts as a conditional use within CN, C1, and C2 commercial zones and develop associated standards.
Planning Manager Mr. Vella will present this item. Just as a reminder, we're in study session, so this is for discussion only. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mayor, Council, Bayer Vella, the town's planning manager, and I wanted to very much acknowledge Kyle Packer, senior planner, who really did all the heavy lifting in terms of research for this project. My designated hitter is at the World Series this evening, so I'm the pinch hitter, and I'm going to do the best I can. All right, so the purpose of this item is really to address a unique opportunity. It's pretty rare that we come across a proposed use that's not accounted for in our code. So this is indeed unique. And we had an entrepreneur approach us back in March, interested in doing what's called a mobile food unit court. And you can see the diagram on the right. This is actually their preliminary sketch of what they want to do in the Mercado del Rio, which is the much vacant commercial development right behind the Target along Pushview Lane. The idea is to have some permanent spots for food trucks and then have a large community gathering area along with shade opportunities, landscaping, restrooms, and actually a fixed-based restaurant within the whole area. So this certainly made us scratch our heads a bit, hadn't come across this in terms of a use, and realized there are absolutely no zoning permissions or standards for such a use. So that led to staff working with that applicant and getting before the commission and ask that this project be initiated. To address the overall use category and create standards. And if and when these standards are established, right thereafter, soon on its coattails, will be a request to actually do this use in Oro Valley or have this use considered. So tonight, the ask, and it is, as the mayor indicated, a study session, invite the council into a conversation about the appropriateness of this use, where it should be located, How it should be managed, and also what standards should be affixed to not just this project, but any future similar project using this same category. So here we go. Let's get to work. All right. So I think these photos pretty well help you, hopefully help you get an idea of what on earth is a mobile food unit court. So the first picture on the left is actually obviously a very informal gathering. This is in Austin, Texas. These setups range from, again, very informal to formal. The photos at the bottom right really have a more permanent fixed setup where there might be paved parking pads for the units, grassy shaded areas for music and gathering and whatnot. So there's a really broad range. And we looked across the country for different examples and different standards that other communities have, and there's a very broad range. And what we're shooting for in the proposed code is on the more formal end of the spectrum, a more refined setup for this use called a mobile food unit court. All right. So as I mentioned before, this is all about creating new code. We do have some existing code that really only addresses the occasional food truck that's passing through the community, might go to a construction site, might show up next to Home Depot for a grand opening for a very short duration, or show up at a festival as part of a temporary use. This would be considered a permanent use. All right, so our journey involved looking at some half a dozen, 13 different jurisdictions. And quite frankly, we did not find any with the requirements that really dug into the level of quality that we feel the town would desire. So we also did research with the American Planning Association. We also worked with the city of Tucson, who is developing code right now for this very use, as they have requests for this as well. And we also bounced ideas off of the applicant that I previously mentioned, who has experience with this use in the Northwest. Northwest of the country, that is. Oregon, Seattle areas. All right, so what are the goals? Some of the goals that we worked on in targeting improvements in code language is understanding and trying to reflect the desire that's clearly expressed in our general plan about the desire for more community gathering spaces, having a very permanent feel, not a temporary feel, that the shaded areas are actually set in place. Parking pads, again, are permanent. They're paved. They're water utility hookups, et cetera, et cetera. And develop standards that would ensure a high-quality development. So here's what the proposal is, and certainly welcome feedback, encourage feedback. The idea is that to establish the opportunity in neighborhood commercial, C1 and C2 commercial zoning as a conditional use permit, acknowledging that this use isn't going to fit everywhere and that perhaps on a case-by-case basis this can be viewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission, Town Council, after the prerequisite neighborhood meetings. Then also specialized standards. We worked, asked ourselves again the question, what makes a quality gathering area? It's making sure there's adequate space, landscaping, shade, restrooms. There's an ask to have an on-site manager to make sure that it's clean, well-kept, trash-free, and really look at some of the nuisances that can pop up from these, such as running generators. The idea with having electrical hookups would preempt the need to use a generator. So in our research, some of the common designs that list kind of really represents the big bag and ugly that can happen with these types of uses. And you can see the column on the far right are some of the code stipulations oriented toward preventing that and making sure that a design is high quality. And the image at the bottom right is one that we generated with AI, which is something that terrifies me, quite frankly. But one of our Kyle is able to use it to our advantage. And really, that's kind of the look, the image that we hope the standards will produce. And again, there'll be an opportunity through the conditional use permit process for Commission and Council to evaluate that that's that we've achieved that. Here are some of the areas which are probably familiar to all of you of where the CN, C1, and C2 zones are located. As I mentioned earlier, not every site's going to be appropriate. And so, again, the CUP process allows us to have that discussion on a case-by-case basis. Relative to the general plan, again, I mentioned already mentioned community gathering places and that need. One thing that the Planning and Zoning Commission brought up that, frankly, we hadn't thought of is on the economic side of it, you know, I didn't realize how many food truck businesses that are successful turn into traditional brick-and-mortar restaurants. And we certainly have a great example in Oro Valley of that very scenario. So this actually provides a seating opportunity for restaurants as well. Figuratively, in little, two types of seating, right? All right, so I really want to turn it back towards you folks, if I may, Mayor, and really garner any feedback relative to, first, the use. You know, do you feel it's appropriate in these districts as a CUP? And if there are any standards that really jump out at you that you'd like to discuss or make sure they're accentuated because they're important, or ask why on earth did you think of that? We're here and open to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Avella, for your presentation. Councilmember Green, then Councilmember Solomon, and Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you for the presentation. Have you broached any of the community businesses around there, Caliber, Collision, the orthopedic office, you know, those places? What do they think about this, you know?
So as far as site-specific, if I understand the question, Mayor, yeah. Member Green, so the actual proposal that came before us as a pre-application has not progressed to that point.
Okay.
So for the first time, I've been in the position of saying, time out, wait. You know,
okay.
We don't even have the ability to say it's a permitted use. So first things first, let's get the code set. The code, if the code gets set, then the next step will be to hold a neighborhood meeting. And if it's approved as proposed, there'll be a conditional use permit. So then we will be checking in with the neighboring business or the shopping center. So.
Just one follow-up. Is there any implications involving the health department in terms of the quality, safety of the food that's being delivered?
Yes. So there isn't. The Pima County Health Department evaluates food trucks the same way they do brick-and-mortar restaurants. One thing we learned along this way is that, along this journey, is that by state law, food trucks have to have a land-based commissary, a main kitchen that's certified by the health department where they do their big lift cooking and food prep. So not all their food, by any stretch of the imagination, is all made in the truck. They have to have a land-based commissary. And the standard that's proposed is that a commissary be provided on the site for preparation for the gathering of food trucks permanently. So,
thank you.
Sure.
Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. I know this is a popular concept or a growing concept in some locations, and I have some concerns about some of our regulations. First, parking. From what I recall, we were saying 10 parking spaces per 1,000 square foot area of pad. Now, I'm assuming the pad would be just about 500 square feet or so, about 20 by 50. Regular parking space is 10 by 10. Mm-hmm. 10 by 20, twice
yes,
as wide.
More or less.
And,
yes.
Okay. So what happens now is we're talking about 10 parking spaces for every truck. I'm just concerned that that's getting excessive. My other concern is we're saying it has to have a central gathering area with landscaping. Wouldn't that really be more up to the private owner and as to what they're going to build and what they thought their market would be? We seem to be designing this, forcing it into a highly specific area. I don't understand the on-site commissary requirement. As you said, each truck is self-contained with water and with, I believe, grease disposal. The other concern is on-site manager. What other businesses do we require to have an on-site manager at? As an owner, I probably would want something like that. But once sure. again, my concern is that we so overregulate it and specify it that it just doesn't ever occur in the community. Those were the most of the examples. Shaded seating. Well, I think we all agree out here, if you're going to build something, you want to provide some shaded seating. But is it our job to dictate to someone they have shaded seating? Do we require restaurants with outdoor seating to have shaded seating? That's all. I think it's a good idea. Whether it'll work in this community, usually it's fairly high density where there's a lot of foot traffic, unless it's a special event. But that's all. I really appreciate your looking for all the potential problems that could happen with something like this. And yes, they can. But then again, those could also be addressed on a nuisance violation type or health code violation type. So I would just like to see perhaps the guidelines not so specific. I agree with things like prohibiting generators, yes. Having water and electric available, yes, that's an expense, but it makes a lot of sense to have that. Mm-hmm. So those are my comments. Sure. Thank you.
Sure.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think this is an awesome idea. I love it. I've been to other towns that provide areas for food trucks, and it's just exciting. I guess what I'm thinking about is if we have an on-site manager, what the responsibilities would be. Because with bathrooms and trash, who would oversee making sure that the area is going to be clean, the bathrooms are going to be clean, and for those people that don't feel like they want to clean up after themselves, who would take that responsibility?
Mm. Okay. Very good. Mayor, Member Jones-Ivey, the entire idea of the on-site manager is to ensure that there is one go-to person at a minimum for all the issues you just articulated. That's the entire purpose. And one thing that, I perhaps should have mentioned in my presentation, in this particular case, application, those food truck pads will have one-year leases. So folks aren't coming and going, and so that's part of the idea of having a commissary right there. They don't want to come and go. So they're setting up it's a permanent use. They're looking at one-year leases. We want to make sure that the trucks are kept in good condition, running condition, and the entire area is maintained and clean. So that's the on-site manager part. There's one go-to person. We don't have to go to 5 or 6, 8 different food truck folks and work with them each individually. There's one person or persons group. So thank you.
Councilmember Bowen, then Vice Mayor Barrett, then Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Vella, to your department for all of this work. I believe I attended the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting where the applicant actually came in, and I just wanted to ask some questions about how this process was initiated. When I go back to that meeting, It looks to me the pre-application is almost in the form of an email. Is that correct? Can you describe for us what the pre-application action entailed?
Sure. Our great questions, Mayor Winfield, Member Vaughn. Pre-applications can be, we do our best to make pre-applications super easy. We want to encourage people to do them. So we will take a pre-application on the back of a napkin. If it helps someone get started in the process, many folks will start out with a very rough concept in pre-app and then submit additional pre-apps with more mature iterations before doing a formal. So yes, it started with an email. With a graphic, and that's when myself and my team started scratching our heads of like, wow, this is unique. And do we have existing code that is remotely can address this to determine whether it's even permitted? And we don't. So we encourage the applicant and work with the applicant as far as getting in front of the commission to ask for the initiation. Do I expect a lot of these use requests coming down the road in the future? Probably not. But it's a potential use, and we're trying to accommodate at least the ability for the community to have that discussion. So.
And I do concur with working with such a requester and helping them move it forward. But one of the things that interests me, when I further researched it, my understanding was that the requester was neither a resident nor a landowner. Mm-hmm. But I see an appreciable amount of work done here. And, yes. I don't think pulling these types of things together is real easy. And I just wanted to understand from your department point of view, how is work like this budgeted? Pop-up work, unanticipated code changes that, come in from the outside world, completely unpredictable. Do you budget for a certain amount of this type of activity each year or not?
So, Mayor Winfield, Member Bowen, so we do maintain budget when we need consultant assistance on a project. Typically with writing code, our team is very proficient. We don't dip into that. So when we get requests like this, we're very deliberative and first, and the zoning code actually specifies this. For a new project like this, we're required to ask for initiation by commission or town council. Commission council has the ability to say, no. Not interested, we're not initiating. When it is initiated, the way it functionally works with my team is that while we're managing all of these current planning projects, sometimes we have comments out and we're waiting for the applicant to submit. We'll take some of that time in between to work on things like this. So we make it work. Sometimes it takes a while to get a code amendment done for that reason. So it's managing different priorities. So,
okay, and I just wanted to share with your department why I asked those questions. I know budget changes are no fun. There's not a person in the world that likes to do a budget change. But for me, the value of updating our budget, it's a learning exercise for both the requester and the person that the request is made to. I truly do think that I've encountered this year about three or four different times of good work being done by the staff, but really wasn't covered in the fiscal year 23-24 budget. And I would have expected, this is out of scope. We need a little bit more money. And I think that helps keep the council better aligned with what's going on in the town. And I'd like to, offer to staff that I actually think it's a win-win. Awkward at first, extra work for the staff, but a better educated council actually understands how you do your work and also your budget next year. And so I appreciate your patience in answering these questions. They're not directly related, but I like the concept, but this is a target of opportunity in terms of, expressing my view of why we seem to see so few budget changes in the middle of the year, but good work needs to get done. It can't possibly be anticipated in the middle of June like this. So thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I think that you've hit on a lot of the concerns that I have in what you have proposed. So good work on trying to anticipate those and get ahead of that. I think having something like this that meets the expectations of our community in terms of cleanliness and attractiveness would be a benefit to the community. I think that a couple of things to consider. One, I think the visuals, especially the vegetation, I've been to several of these in other communities as I've traveled, and all the ones that feel successful to me have a lot of vegetation. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that our regular commercial amount of vegetation for a permanent building would work as well in a place where it's really designed to be an outside area, since there's nowhere indoors for people to be. So, the outside area and the ambiance in the outside is the area. And so I would assume, like Councilmember Solomon said, that an owner would want to do that. But if they didn't, I still think that, especially if we're putting this in an area which could be CN, C1, C2, some of those are really nice areas, that we would want to have those standards in place to make sure that we have a good amount of vegetation, a good amount of cleanliness and visual appeal. I also think the setbacks, when you say the standard commercial setbacks, I'm not exactly clear on what that is. So that might depend on, the conditional use process of where each item is located. But depending on what is next to it, it may not really be appropriate to have a food truck kind of right up against the property line. So I don't know if the setbacks need to be a little bit larger. I agree with Councilmember Solomon that the parking seems like it could be a bit excessive, depending on the number of food trucks that are there. You want enough parking, but like if there's 15 food trucks, 150 spaces seems like a lot of parking for a small food truck court. I don't know. So I guess maybe that's the right ratio, but it kind of feels like it could become a lot depending on how many food trucks and what kind of parking area that is. I think that shade is really important because I do kind of question how this will survive well in the heat of the summer. I think it will do well in the winter when we have excellent weather and it's enjoyable to get out and sit and enjoy some different varieties of food, and everyone can choose what they like, and that's kind of fun. But I think that in the summer, it could be a challenge. So I do think that shade at minimum is important for the seating. And then I wanted to mention two more things quickly. One, lighting. I think we need, whatever lighting standards are used, we need to make sure that they're consistent with our dark skies code. Mm-hmm. And two, safety. I don't know, maybe it would be worth circling back or asking our police department for their standards of safety in designing these types of areas or in potential background checks, if that would be helpful or needed at all for the food truck owners. Because, just depending, I guess having the on-site manager there will kind of help with that. But if this is going to be a place where, teenagers or people go and hang out, I want to make sure that there's nothing that would feel a little bit unsafe about it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So whatever our police department would suggest in helping make sure we maintain that level of safety we all treasure, I think would be excellent.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes, Mr. Veller, you had mentioned a one-year lease minimum. Was that from the proposed applicant, or is that something that we're putting in? Because it seemed like...
Yeah, we're not.
Okay, yeah. All right, because it would seem like actually you'd want more rotation to keep people coming. They know every month there's a new food truck. All right, so
sure.
I don't even know if we want a minimum in there as far as, trucks can change out every day or not. I'd be a little more concerned about that. But, you know, have to think about that. That's all. But I was just concerned that we don't set a time frame unless it's maybe on the minimum and where we're concerned that we don't want that changeover, or maybe it's fine if they want that changeover. I just haven't given that much thought to it. Thanks.
Councilmember Green?
I think overall it's a terrific concept. I think it's something that I would be in favor of. I'm kind of wondering, I guess, as an oncologist, hematologist, you got 10 trucks there. If they're all running, do we have a carbon monoxide issue? Do we have a ventilation issue? Might be worth kind of measuring that and making sure that they're not pumping a lot of carbon monoxide out into the area behind them.
Or if I may, with us providing the power, so that I think, yes, I would agree, you'd want some regulation that the engines can't be running, because if we're providing like a 220, you know, 60 amp service or something at each spot, that should, but that's a great point.
Yeah, it's, that's what I understood, is that electric and water would be provided at each site. It's almost like an RV park. So, Mr. Villa, one question I have is, I like the concept. I like the various criteria or regulations, if we want. I personally think that's important, and I appreciate the work that you and the staff have done. This seems very kind of a specific use, right? And what I mean by that, we had a Bashus that's no longer a Bashus. You know, it's Gaslight Theater and Harbor Freight. We had a Burger King that's now Starbucks. We had a Pizza Hut that's now Sherwin-Williams. Right. We have a Starbucks that's now Street Taco. I'm not sure what this, if this doesn't succeed or isn't successful, what, this seems fairly like a unique use, right? That another use to transition into this, I'm not sure what it would necessarily be, except maybe an RV park.
And that's a good observation, Mayor. I think in terms of adaptability, this probably has a much higher degree of adaptability when you think about the fact that not much of the area is actually going to be developed with structures.
Okay, so is that the idea?
They could blank slate it and start anew fairly easily. When I look at this layout, I mean, I do think of, this may be a bit of a stretch, I think of, it's almost a Hono Chula-like. There's wayfinding through there. There are restrooms. There's a performance aspect of this. So their desire was to set this up in the middle with a stage, a music opportunity, outdoor music opportunity.
So there are potentials.
That was a question I had in terms of music, sound. We have a sound ordinance, so presumably that would be applicable here.
Yes, and if I may, also, Mayor, even absent these regulations, when anyone wants to have regular outdoor music, there's a CUP associated with that as well, where we get into that analysis. So,
yes. And in terms of, this is kind of even true with a restaurant. You know, if you ever look at the back of the restaurant, sometimes you don't want to walk into the front of the restaurant, right? Because of the grease trap, the garbage, and so on and so forth. So that's a mild concern I have in terms of just the environment, because, you know, it mentions about a grease collection, disposal, the garbage, and so on and so forth. So I think that that's something that really has to have some, really has to be thought through in terms sure. of how that's captured. The other, in terms of the, you had a few photos that showed actual food trucks. How much control is there in terms of just the visual quality of the trucks, for example? You know, Wawa Lemonade, I love their food truck or their lemonade truck. There's some that I've seen that I wouldn't, you know, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do business with them just because of the appearance. I mean, they might have the best food on the planet, but just their presentation is right. lacking. So maybe that's just driven by the market.
Well, yeah, actually, Mayor, I have an idea on that. So we apply, I don't remember the exact wording, but professional quality and artistic standards to A-frame signs. So it enables the reviewer, in the case of A-frame signs, staff, to make sure that it's a professional presentation. It's not paper plates with markers stapled on the A-frame. So we have a precedent for that kind of language. So that's something we can shape and duplicate in that same way to get at the point that you're making.
Yeah, so, you know, Josh Bishop's a great example of Fork and Fire. I mean, they have a great presentation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they have good food, but their food truck looks great. Same with Jeff at Wow Wow Lemonade. I mean, they have a great product, and their presentation is good, which I think is really important. And I think that's really the quality that our community would be looking for, right? Mm-hmm. Other questions from council? Councilmember Green?
I don't see the dumpster on this drawing. Where would that be?
If I may, Mayor, Member Green. So this drawing is very immature. If they progress, you betcha they're going to be dumpsters.
Okay.
And these standards would require that. So, yeah.
Yep. Vice Mayor?
I think I mentioned the vegetation, but I can't actually remember if I mentioned this part or not. But one thing I'm concerned about is the heat island effect. So you mentioned you don't want gravel, and instead you want asphalt or concrete. And I really think it's important that all the surfaces not be entirely asphalt or concrete, because I don't think we want to take a several-acre parcel and just pave it,
right?
You know, and then park a whole bunch of food trucks on it. I don't know that I feel like that gives us the ambiance that we would be looking for in something like this. And so whatever, you're the experts in figuring out how to use code language to create that ambiance. But I mentioned vegetation. I'm sure there's other ways, sense of place that we've talked about. You know, I think that's kind of the level for me that I would be looking for it. So in terms of how to put that into the code language, I rely on you a bit for that. But I just don't want to see just a big lot paved over with asphalt and a bunch of food trucks parked on it. So,
Going will take it.
If that makes sense. Thank you.
It does.
Councilmember Nicholson?
I like the concept. I think a lot of Oro Valley citizens, especially in my age, would love to have something like this where you have a whole bunch of different food trucks go in there and try out different types of food in the beer garden. I think I'd definitely go visit a beer garden. I think you guys brought up pretty much all the stuff that we worry about, the water, electricity, the trucks running, all that type of stuff. And I think it's good. I think that there's probably a little bit of worry about the screening, the looks, kind of like what Joe said. You know, and you also don't want, like, fabric things that are going to fall apart and look bad. But I would assume anyone that's doing this, I mean, it's a $1.5, $2 million project. They're going to put the money in. That's a big risk. They're going to do it. And I think Steve's point, I think it would be good if they could move in and out, have different food trucks there every week. But I think it's probably the financing for the one-year lease is my guess why they have to do that. Mm-hmm. And I also like Steve's point, too, like, you know, over-restricting them to what they want to do. Like, you know, having the shade structures, a big metal one with, the hotel-type screens, it's great, but they're super, super expensive. Like, Bergie's Coffee, which is, like, downtown Gilbert, cute little place. They have trees. The trees have been there forever. But just trees. It's nice. You go down there, sit down there with their family. Not super expensive. It's a little expensive for high-growth ones, but over a year or two, they kind of grow pretty quickly like weeds here. Like, I wouldn't want to be overly... I would be kind of like, see, if they're going to put the money in, they're going to spend the time and money. I would hate to, like, overly say you have to put certain types of shade in. They're going to put the shade in there because they're going to want their businesses to have people go there and enjoy it. But, you know, those shade structures are great when you're doing, like, a bashes a $30 million, $40 million project, you can, a $1 million shade structure is not much, but like when you're talking about $1.5 million, $2 million, which is a lot to us, but like for them to put in a $300,000 to $400,000 shade structure, it's sure. Can kill the project. So I kind of agree with Steve on that. And I think they're going to try their very best to try and make it successful without keeping their costs low. And I don't want to over-restrict them to the point where we don't see something like this. But I think my only concern would be the, like Joe talks about, the trucks and a little bit of quality. We don't want to see, you know, blue tarps type of thing. Obviously, we're not going to allow that. But, right. You know, some of the stuff where you try and cheap out a little bit, and I think your staff does a great job of making sure we don't have that stuff. But.
Okay.
Can we go to the slide that shows the matrix of requirements? Yes, right there. Thanks. So, Mr. Bell, these, so you have common designs and then proposed requirement for Oro Valley. You looked at a number of different communities. I mean, are these requirements proposed for Oro Valley? Are they unique to Oro Valley? Are there other communities that have, you know, similar requirements?
So if it may, Mayor, we were unable to find anyone with requirements this extensive, except in working with the City of Tucson staff who have working on a code same time that we are. These are the things they're going to be requiring as well. So for them, the biggest issue is discussion about generators, whether or not to. Given the value of a quiet environment, we felt that was a must-do in Oro Valley. So these are the same types of requirements that you're going to see in the City of Tucson code, we estimate. And they really had... direct experience where an unpermitted mobile food court happened organically and it became a regular thing, and they literally had everything in that left column, common designs, going on. They had hoses crisscrossing the site. They had extension cords 100, 200 feet going hither and thither. And so that use, that organization that was doing that is now looking for a permanent site, and they too said, okay, time out, we want to develop code, and so that's where the communication started. So yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Bowen.
Regarding that, you know, the applicant that we have, I had mentioned, not a landowner, not a resident, but there's a lot of really good input to be obtained from people that are actually doing this. You mentioned that you've been looking at other municipalities' code. Have we also talked to any local operators that have multiple food trucks and say, look at our code, what do you think? Because I do agree, we could make it constrictive in a way that we don't understand. Mm-hmm. Then you guys, this is a much bigger problem than your town council might understand. That's the kind of input that I'd like to get from somebody that's actually doing it in the local area and has multiple trucks. You know, what do you think of this? And, yeah, you know, try to shoot some holes in it as far as, you know, what Mayor, they see as a problem. That's all.
Yeah, and I appreciate that comment. Mayor Member Bowen, you know, just it triggered in my head, you know, we need to go talk to Fork and Fire. They've had a lot of experience. We have not had a sit down with them. So good idea. We have reached out. There is a food truck organization in the Tucson area, and we've done our darndest to get a hold of them by email and phone, and we're going to keep trying, but we haven't had any luck. So,
I believe yeah. Pima County, because Jeff at Wow Wow Lemonade, I know he's going to some place that is a food court that was recently design, constructed. Are you familiar with that? I know I'm kind of being
no. I
can't be more
one
specific.
That, you know, I have a fair amount of personal experience with is right across from the Mercado, right off of Congress I-10. There is a collection of shipping containers that have been artfully converted.
Mm-hmm.
This is similar, and it's quite frequently, there will be food trucks on the outer perimeter of that. In fact, my favorite food truck in the city goes there, so I go there. I think this has those types of elements in terms of when you think about it, that containers, that the shade, the landscaping, the walkability through all the different areas. So I'm beyond that, the only one that I know of that's very food truck oriented is the one that happened organically, and it's in the process of moving to a permanent location. So, and I don't know exactly where that is.
Yeah, I think to Councilmember Bowen's point, I think reaching out to Jeff, and I don't remember Jeff's last name, but at Wow Wow Lemonade.
Okay.
Because, like I said, he's got a great truck. He's going to some place that was specifically built for food trucks.
Huh.
And so I think he would be another good resource.
Definitely.
Councilmember Nicholson?
There's actually a Facebook page, Tucson Food Truck Roundup. It's like 40,000 members. As far as I know, the food truck guys all DM each other like, hey, there's an event here. Here's how you register. They all have their own little communities, whether it's Tucson or Portland or Phoenix, where usually they have
mm-hmm.
a social group where they talk to each other and help each other out and let each other know when there's special events. So that might be a place to reach out.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Very helpful.
tell Kyle he's got some great AI skills.
Yeah. No. Like I said, it still kind of scares me, but it worked. It worked well. So,
okay. All right. Mr. Vail, are you looking for any? I think there's support.
I have a couple of pages, so very helpful comments. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Thank you. How about if we take a 5-10 minute break before going into the next item? Is that okay? 10 minute break. Okay, we'll resume our study session. We'll go to item 2 of the study session. Mr. Standish, please read the item.
Presentation and discussion regarding a potential zoning code amendment to amend provisions regarding the keeping of animals for food production and animal husbandry purposes on residentially zoned properties.
Probably should have announced this before that, but the D-backs lost this evening. So. All right. So, Mr. Vella, we'll present this item and lift our spirits.
Let the puns begin. This is a potential code amendment before us that I know most of you are already fairly familiar with. For staff, this is really one of those long time coming things. And what I mean by that is we do get inquiries, I don't have stats on it, but fairly often asking, hey, can I have 2 chickens in my backyard? And the ensuing discussion that happens afterwards. And we're all aware that, and have been aware for some time, that our code is the same exact code that was in existence when I came into work Oro Valley in 1999 without any changes. Much has changed since then. There's been very much, as you're aware, a national movement, very much a regional movement, to move toward allowing urban, suburban, small animal agriculture. So right now, our code is really the problem statement is that both residential scale, small ag animals, and large are all lumped into one category. Under farm and ranch use. And our current regulations lack opportunities for folks under 3 acres who certainly don't think of themselves as a farm or a ranch to have perhaps a couple of chickens or a hutch of rabbits. Not permitted unless you're a minimum of 3 acres in size. So, and the other thing that's lacking, even if that were not to change, the other part that's lacking is standards to prevent nuisance. We don't have them. So really the code, we feel, needs a comprehensive look-see. Really with perhaps, being more permissive as adjacent jurisdictions have in terms of the small animal side of it, but also keeping a very, very sharp eye to maintaining neighborhood compatibility and avoiding nuisance. So our journey on this in terms of research, similar to the last item, involved a lot of hunting and gathering relative to other jurisdictions that have gone this direction, who have moved towards maintaining and sharpening restrictions for larger animals, livestock, ag animals, and being more permissive when it comes to small ag animals. And so you can see the list. There's close to 20 different jurisdictions. Most on this list are actually in Arizona, majority are in Arizona. And certainly every nearby jurisdiction is on this list in terms of making the changes. Every single one of them break those and make those distinctions between small and large. Some do it by one master category, and other ones create two different categories for large and small and associated standards. So with the completion of that research, and I'd like to emphatically thank Ms. Chavez, our new planner, for doing a lot of work. She did all of the heavy lifting here to do very intensive research on both permissions and standards associated with this. This is one of those amendments that the more you pull on the thread, the more you find in terms of making sure that all areas are addressed. The journey started, as most of you know, with the Randalls, Ben and Savannah, contacting us with interest in doing small animal husbandry and agriculture on their residential lot. That led to an initiation request of the Planning and Zoning Commission that was done. We just recently went and visited commission to ask for feedback. And here we are at council. We have not started drafting any code whatsoever. We wanted to really have a conversation with you folks. And to do that, we've kind of winnowed it down to five key topic areas. And I'm going to do my best to march through these. There's a lot of data, and I'm going to try to go through these quickly and keep it high level and not get us too bogged down. Key topic one. All of the topics are interrelated. The key topic one is, potentially expanding allowances for small ag, and identifying what types of animals are appropriate. That's a very, very important decision point. And from there, it leads into the other topics. What's the appropriate property size? What are the appropriate standards? What other restrictions should be levied? So we're going to march through each of those. But topic one, really the starting point is understanding what are we doing now? So as I mentioned, right now, in terms of permitted animal types, there's one category, and it lumps livestock and small animals into one master category and essentially treats them the same, even though they have very distinct impacts and whatnot. So you can see all the different zoning districts right now where you can ask, starting with a 7,000-square-foot lot, R17, that's the, to give you a quick image, that's a prevailing lot size you might find in Rancho Vistoso. That's a small lot. And you can see the numbers. 7 stands for 7,000 on a lot size, 10,000, 20, 20,000, and so on as you go up to 144,000 square feet. That's 3 acres. That's where it becomes a permitted use. So the way it stands now, you have to be in one of these zoning districts, but you also have, if you look at the middle silo, that gray area, you have to have a minimum of 3 acres. So you can be an R17, which only requires a 7,000-foot lot, but you have to amalgamate 3 acres to be able to ask for a conditional use permit if you want to have one chicken. Okay. That's a neighborhood meeting, two public hearings, if you want to do one chicken. And I say one, that sounds pretty dramatic, but typically folks don't want one. It could be two, could be five, could be 10, could be 20. And the thing, here's the other concern here with our existing code, is there isn't a limit. Okay? The way it works now, you're required to do a conditional use permit if you're less than 3 acres. You can ask for 100 chickens if you want, or rabbits, or so on. Fill in the blank in terms of animals. There are no limits. That's set on a case-by-case basis, which is very unusual. Most jurisdictions with updated codes have ratios, maximum caps, full stop. So our code certainly can stand some improvement. And what this does cumulatively with this 3-acre requirement is there are actually very, very few properties where you can make this happen. There isn't one property in Oro Valley that's zoned R17 that's 3 acres that doesn't already have a plat approved on it. It just doesn't exist. Same with R110. Doesn't exist. And I'm going to show some graphics later to show where there are opportunities, or there are limited opportunities. So part of a question is, where are these located, and should they be a permitted use or conditional use permit once you identify the appropriate zoning districts? So here's what most other jurisdictions are saying about whether or not it should be a permitted use or a conditional use. The majority, as you can see, have it set up as a permitted use, okay? Recognizing that the conditional use permit is perhaps outsized if someone's doing a small number of low-impact animals. And that's assuming you've winnowed your list down to where you truly have low-impact animals and you have appropriate nuisance abatement. Most have set it up to be a permitted use. It's very rare to have it as a conditional use. One, Mesa, very interestingly, has it set up where the zoning administrator can do a discretionary review. So it doesn't go through the full neighborhood meeting and two public hearing process. So why do folks are so favorable toward a permitted use? One common thread that we found in reading news articles, particularly when the city of Tucson adopted theirs, is the comparison to dogs keeps coming up. Dogs as a benchmark, okay? The realization that some animals, hens, rabbits, small goats, don't come anywhere near the level of impact of a dog. It's disproportionate. Dogs bark, can be heard several houses away. You have the waste issues. And most, per OVPD and other police departments and surrounding jurisdictions who now allow small animals as permitted, the complaints are all about dogs. Okay? Dogs keep coming up as a benchmark, and I did want to lay out, too, that in Oro Valley, you can have up to 6 dogs on a property. So it would take quite a few rabbits and quite a few chickens to equate that level of impact. In reading, again, news accounts of the actual discussions amongst city council members, that was a focal area.
Buyers, that's 6 dogs for any size property?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, any size property. All right. So most that set it up as a permitted use also make sure that you have restrictive regulations and ability to control nuisance to make that acceptable. So that's an option, is making it a permitted use. Certainly is an option to make it a conditional, as well as the ability to set it up for special zoning administrator review with criteria, if you feel that's most appropriate for Oro Valley. All right, what animals? Which animals are considered low impact versus not? Which ones are considered small versus large? Of all those jurisdictions we surveyed, and there's an attachment to your staff report that gives you every single animal per jurisdiction that they permit. This is an amalgamation, and you can see the percentages. Most are okay with the list that you see in red, except potbelly pigs. I have no idea why potbelly pigs are not favored. And frankly, I don't know enough about potbelly pigs to understand their potential impact, but I do know folks do raise them like dogs. Probably not something that would be allowed in my house. So, so part of the consideration that we'd hope to get feedback is you could see the list that might be appropriate. Based on the experiences of other jurisdictions to your left under that bullet list. So the next related question is, all right, well, at what point is it okay in terms of property size? At some point, it's too small. Where is that that sweet spot, if you will, in terms of you've got enough space to minimize nuisance? So I mentioned, again, current code, you have to have a minimum of 3 acres. In terms of opportunities, what that translates into roughly 319 properties in Oro Valley where you can currently ask either for a conditional use permit or it's a permitted use if you're R1-44. That's not a lot of properties. As I mentioned previously, there are no opportunities in R17 or R110. And the other important fact that I'm sure everyone in council is aware of is most HOAs do not allow poultry of any sort or livestock. And as you all know, a homeowner's got to meet both sets of rules, town zoning and HOA rules. So if you were to apply HOAs with restrictions, this map would be winnowed even further. And I have some more information on that later in the presentation. All right, so this is what other jurisdictions do in terms of minimum lot size. Some of it is very much a head-scratcher for me personally. Marana, Tucson, you can go down to 1,000 square feet. 1,000 square feet. So quite small. I'm not sure we have any lots of that size in Oro Valley. So you can see right now Oro Valley has got the highest minimum of all the jurisdictions surveyed. And Mesa is just under an acre. So the proposed idea, staff looking at lot sizes, setbacks, and whatnot, is 20,000 square feet. Still a conservative number compared to our adjacent jurisdictions, but we certainly would like feedback from council. That seemed to be kind of heading in the right direction, and I'm going to explain a little more why. All right. What impact, if we chose 20,000, that's R120, what would that do in terms of expanding availability? The map on your left are properties in Oro Valley that are 3 acres or larger. Now let's refine that a little bit more. Where are the areas where there aren't any HOAs? In other words, there aren't HOA restrictions for fowl and livestock. Those are the areas in red. It's fairly limited in terms of the opportunity. Going to a 20,000 square foot minimum instead, expands the ability, but it does not make it pervasive throughout the community. That would be a conservative approach. And I certainly need feedback from council tonight whether that's too far or it's too little in terms of change and creating opportunities. All right. It also matters how many animals can you have, right? All jurisdictions set a cap. As I mentioned previously, Right now, we don't have one. It's set on a case-by-case basis with a conditional use permit, except for R144. And there's no cap in R144 for small animals. There is a cap for large animals. So what we did is we looked at jurisdictions, and it's a ratio depending on property size. So we use that 20,000 square foot that I mentioned earlier. And these are the numbers you would see in terms of permissions. Anyone want to be large-eyed by looking at Suarita and Tucson? So that is a significant number. So you can see the variability with Marana and Gilbert. The numbers are generous. All right. So what is staff thinking in terms of potential appropriate numbers? I'm going to go back to dogs. I mentioned the 6. And we were thinking of that as a gauge, if you will. An actual personal experience of staff with small animals and understanding their impacts. And so some conservative numbers are being thrown out. At 20,000 to an acre, 6. I can promise you, from personal experience, 6 chickens don't come anywhere close to the impact of 6 dogs. And so on. So we are proposing numbers well less than adjacent jurisdictions. And we'd like to hear from you folks whether you think that's still not conservative enough, or they need to be more similar to our neighbors. All right, so once you dial in those other things, the next step is really also understanding what are the best practices on a site to try to minimize nuisance concerns and complaints. One of the things that we would propose in code is asking for the same setbacks that would be required for a building, so that a chicken coop can't be put right on the property line. That's permitted in the city of Tucson. You can put it right on the property line. So the idea is to still ask for larger setbacks. The other consideration we thought is that they must be in the backyard, not in the front yard. And that standards to ensure that coops and pens are maintained in good condition. And doing our best in terms of when we do get complaints by having zoning code stipulations about odor, noise, and other nuisances, shift any potential enforcement burden away from OVPD to zoning enforcement when it comes to small ag animals. All right, home stretch. Last topic is where are some areas where we need to tighten things up? One is that there's some animals we should just be outright prohibiting, in our opinion. Code already prohibits swine, and we feel that should be maintained. Making it clear that there are some animals that aren't welcome from the nuisance perspective, like roosters. They're loud. It's very common in other jurisdictions to not permit roosters. Male fowl, same reason. They vocalize more than, by far, more than hens, as well as hogs. And special steps when it comes to bees. And we've done a fair amount of research relative to beekeeping. All right, so those are the 5 topic areas. I covered a lot of ground. But it really, the core of this is really seeing if there's interest
and taking our current category of farm and ranch and breaking it into two different categories, and then sorting out allowances and types accordingly. All right, I'm going to end there, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Vella.
Open it up. Thanks.
I have a blue card, and we have a very patient young lady and her dad. So I'd like to invite Savannah and Ben Randall to come forward, and if you'd state your name and whether you're a resident of Oral Valley.
Hello, thank you for your time. I'm Ben Randall, and this is Savannah Randall, and we are residents of Oral Valley. I have been for 21 years or so. We are in a R136 zoned lot, 1 acre. And we've had hens for the last few years before we knew that it was not allowed. In fact, our next door neighbors have also had hens, as have others in the neighborhood, and they were all surprised to hear that we're actually not allowed. So when we found that out, we came and talked in May. And we've been really just ecstatic, and I want to express so much appreciation and gratitude for especially the staff and Alex this whole time and keeping us involved. It's been an awesome learning experience, especially for a 9 and now 10-year-old to go through this and see what impact we can make and how this whole process works. So it's been great. I don't have anything to express other than that. Savannah would like to maybe talk about a few things. We could probably share some insight on maybe some of the common concerns as we have hens. So she's got some things she could say about that. I'm going to talk. Where's the notebook? Where's the notebook? I'll grab it. It's a little past bedtime. And we were up late pigging out on candy last night. So, anything you want to say?
So being concerned about the noise level concerns me because, to me, our dogs are actually louder than our chickens.
We have 3 dogs.
Yeah. So. And it's a really good learning experience for all younger kids and some adults, too.
Raising the animals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To give a little insight on what we have experience with ours, we started with 10, and that went down quickly to 8. Now we have 6. And in that time, we've had them a few different spots. At one point, we had the chicken coop about 10 feet from our master bedroom. That should give you an idea on noise. I don't think we would put the dogs that close to our master bedroom. The hens are very quiet, especially at night. They go in when it gets dark, and they wake up when it gets light, and there really isn't any noise at night. Much different from maybe other dogs in the neighborhood that tend to bark all night at the wind blowing and other stuff. We get about 2 eggs per day from our 6 hens. We probably got a little bit more when they were a little younger. They're about 3 years old now. But that's about average for this time of year. In the winter months, they don't get as much light, so maybe we'll get no eggs. If it's a cold, dark, rainy day or something, maybe we'll get 1. In the summertime, when there's more light, maybe we'll get 4 per day, something like that. We'd like more than that. That's enough to kind of supplement our family.
They're fine.
Thank you. When the price of eggs shot up, it was really handy to have them out of our backyard. And the eggs that our chickens give us are much hardier than the store bought. That was something I wasn't ready for. Yeah, they're fresher because they're not washed in chemicals. You don't have to refrigerate them. You can keep them at room temperature in the house for a week or two, and they're fine. They also have harder shells, harder to crack,
harder to break.
Yeah, and we just feed the chickens scraps, you know, table scraps, really inexpensive food that we get at Tractor Supply, and they've been great pets. They love getting picked up by Savannah and getting pet. They're very personable, tame. You know, they're not aggressive at all or mean.
Yeah, which a lot of people think they are. So.
Yes. What else? Anything else you want to say about chickens? Okay. Are there any questions that we could answer as the ones who brought it up originally and as we have a little bit of experience with it?
Any questions for Savannah or Ben? Vice Mayor?
Savannah, it's so good to see you. You gave a great speech at the Planning and Zoning Commission when you were bringing this forward and the call to audience. I was wondering if you could share a little bit with the council about how you got involved in raising animals and your interest in that.
You got this.
I've always had a knack for being good with animals, and I've just always wanted to be a veterinarian when I grow up and help animals. And then I realized that I wanted little chicks because they're fluffy, adorable, and when they're older, they can provide us with natural food resources. At the time, we didn't know that they were not allowed yet, but that's what we're working on now. And I'd also like to have some maybe miniature goats, too. They can also provide natural resources, such as milk. That I am not allergic to. And then I got in the newspaper twice, and that really set the whole thing off.
Yeah. And we've been learning a lot ever since.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilmember Green?
Have you had any issues with your neighbors at all?
She has. Yes, once some neighbors in the neighborhood became aware that this was not allowed, we definitely faced a lot of opposition, and in some cases even got kind of nasty. In fact, the audience is very small here, but if anybody is going to look at the notes here or anybody's listening online, we all know how nasty social media and media in general can get, and communicating from behind a screen. And so I would urge people who want to make personal attacks to maybe take a couple deep breaths before they do, especially if they're addressing them to a 9-year-old in the future. It's been interesting. Most neighbors are supportive. As I mentioned, we've had next door neighbors who have had hens before, and we have neighbors a couple streets down who have hens. We've lived a few different places in Oro Valley. We used to live in the Oracle McGee area, and it was very common around there. We were around it a lot.
Thank you.
I think it may be a letter from you that was included in our packet,
and
you spoke to the number of chickens, and 10 seemed to be the... Could you just elaborate on why 10
Sure.
is a good number?
Yes, 9's kind of a weird number because it's a little bit hard to buy 9 chickens, believe
yeah.
it or not. We didn't know that, but if you're in season and you are able to get to Tractor Supply before they're sold out or when they first get their deliveries, you can purchase a minimum of 4. I think it is 4, right?
And
then you can purchase as many as you want. So that opens up the possibility. That season is the spring only. So this time of year, of course, they don't have baby chicks there. There are other places in town that will sell them in quantities of 2 or quantities of 4. So that also makes it difficult to get a specific number of 9. So what we did when we got ours was went through a hatchery. And the minimum quantity that you can order through a hatchery is 10. Or in quantities of 10. And believe it or not, they send them in the mail. And the Oro Valley Post Office right up the road has a special holding spot for live animals.
Yeah.
And they receive them there, they keep them there in climate-controlled area, and they give you a call and you come and pick them up. And that's what we did, yeah. So that 10 would, if we get 2 eggs out of 6 chickens now, we could probably get another egg or 2 out of 10-ish, and that opens up the possibility to buying from hatcheries in the off-season. So that's nice. Another thing that I did mention in the letter, I would like to be able to nurture Savannah's growth in this area and maybe others. Maybe it's something that she'll latch onto and want to continue forever. Maybe not. One thing that City of Tucson does, and maybe other jurisdictions, and I have not researched it near as much as the experts, of course, but they have an exemption for active members of agricultural nonprofits like 4-H and FFA are specifically mentioned in the Tucson Code. And so that exemption applies to the numbers of animals, I think to the types, but that would open it up so that if we wanted to invest more in this in the future, we could do that, and that takes a higher level of responsibility, of course, which the membership to that ag club would show. Right. I don't have an interest in having a giant farm. You saw the numbers in Tucson. On our 1 acre, we could have 36 chickens, or in Sorority, we could have 48. Yeah. I have no interest in that. I do like the idea of what would I say? What's the word? Regenerative agriculture. That'd be interesting to get more into, the idea that the animals are all providing complementary services to each other. So the chickens eat the insects and give you the eggs and
provide natural fertilizer.
Provide fertilizer for maybe some crops that grow food that the bigger animals eat, and then you have meat from those bigger animals or something like that. It's kind of interesting. So, that's kind of what we envision maybe going in the future, and that type of exemption would probably allow that.
All right. Thank you, Savannah. Yes. Other questions for? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for letting us speak too.
Appreciate you joining us. So, Mr. Vella, you can return to the podium. Questions, Council? Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Vella. I admit this is a topic I don't know a lot about, but kind of taking a 10,000-foot look at it, when I look at Oral Valley and how different we are in terms of requesting CUPs at all different property size levels, but also having been on the council for 3 years and not seeing a CUP request in this area, nor in all of the previous council meetings I attended just out in the audience,
right?
You know, the input that I'd like to give you is that it would seem like we've made too much out of this by requiring a CUP for all these different property sizes. But the reality is, many years of my experience is that handling this on a case-by-case basis hasn't been super burdensome to the town, because there just haven't been that many cases. Mm. And the way I look at Oral Valley, one of the things I've seen about Oral Valley that's amazed me is I will contact people that will say Oral Valley's way too big, and I'll contact other people who say Oral Valley's way too small. This is a place where people from New York come together with people that lived in towns of 300, and so there's very different perspectives on what your hometown should be like. But my observation is that what we're doing is likely right. If we, have CUPs needed for all these, and the applications aren't coming up, then the cases are truly rare, and that we should continue to handle it by CUP and not by ordinance or by code, because when you have the luxury of having so few cases, you should have the resources to be able to look at things on a case-by-case basis. Now, if I had seen one of these every few months, then I'd feel much differently. I would say, yes, we've got to just basically mandate this is what we need to do, and we got to unburden the planning staff. But my input to you is I actually think the CUPs are working very well, and I'm surprised, but that's my observation. So thank you.
And if I may, Mayor, because I think that's a great observation in that. Member Bowen, I have not seen one CUP since 1999, and I have a bit of an alternative theory of why that is. One is that, this is anecdotal, by the way, so I don't have evidence to back this up. One is I don't think anyone in the really expects to have to, that town has such steep requirements for such a relatively small ask if someone's doing two chickens. So folks don't know they have to do that. When we hear from folks on this issue, it's because a neighbor complained. And so we've had zoning code enforcement areas, and the last two that I can think of were entirely generated, and you were at the commission meeting, I mentioned this,
We get involved this issue on a complaint basis. Folks don't on the front end come in and ask. We do get calls, people asking, and when we tell them what they have to do, we never hear from them again. And I know there are chickens out there, quite a few of them in the community, and I don't have any sense of how many. But more often than not, the last two complaints we've got were because folks got accidental roosters. You know, as Mr. Randall mentioned, you know, when you go and purchase, it's hit or miss. They try to get it right, make sure you get a hen, but sometimes they get an accidental rooster. And so people find out the hard way when they mature and they start belting out and screaming. And in the last two cases where we had complaints, folks are complaining, neighbors are complaining about crowing. We got with the property owners and said, well, look, actually, sorry, we got the complaint. Yes, I understand you have one accidental rooster. You have six other hens. You have to get rid of a whole lot per code.
In both cases, when the complainant found out they were asking all of them, the chickens, to go, when they only wanted the rooster gone, they requested to pull the complaint and asked for no action if they would just get rid of the rooster. And that's how those two got resolved, because we act on a complaint basis.
So I think this is one of those uses, and again, I don't have evidence to back this up, it's happening anyway, and our regulations are so steep that they're ignored.
That's my estimation.
And frankly, that's how the Randalls came to our attention. I'm sure I can't speak for them, but they didn't know these requirements existed, these steep requirements existed.
They mentioned that they weren't aware.
Yeah. Sure.
Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green.
Hi. Thank you. I think I agree with you. People aren't going to come in and ask for a conditional use permit or go through that process for something as small as having a few chickens. So the fact that people haven't applied for that is not necessarily correlates to the fact of what people would like to have if they were allowed to have animals on these smaller lots. My one question is, R136, a 36,000 square foot lot, almost an acre, is to me a no-brainer. 20,000, I agree too, but my concern is, or maybe it's not a concern, is that if we look at the percentage of lots that are 20,000 square foot or larger in Oro Valley, it's a fairly small percentage.
It is.
I'm sure we have a lot of people out there on 6,000, 8,000 square foot lots that when they hear, oh, you're allowed to have chickens, they're going to want to have chickens or rabbits or, you know, other allowed small animals. So have you looked at the fact of, you know, what about these smaller lots? Because I know, and as you point out, a lot of jurisdictions, they're very small lots that allow them. So do you have any input on, I mean, 20,000 is certainly a good first step, but I just, and maybe that's a good test case, and we see what happens, but I would suspect there'd be a lot of requests for smaller lot sizes. So I'd like your you know, what info you might have on that.
If I may, Mayor, Member Solomon, certainly happy to look into that further. You know, my sense of what is unique in Oro Valley is that once you get below 20,000 square feet, just about every subdivision is in an HOA. Every single one of them, those R17s, they're all in HOAs with we didn't study every CC&R, but it's pretty boilerplate, as you know, to not allow fowl.
You make a good point. So it's probably a moot point because, yes, I would agree with you that probably 99% of all lots under that are in HOA. So my only other comment, and maybe you have some information on this, is you talked about rear yard and side yards. You know, typically, of course, the side yard setbacks are the smallest, and you'll get the proximity of neighbors closest on the side yards. That's where almost all the bedroom windows will be. So is it something to look at to say maybe limiting it to rear yard, or am I overthinking it? And do side yards and see if there's any issues with it.
You know, if I may, Mayor, Member Solomon, you actually have a good point there that the complaints I've seen have been when coops are in side yards. They're too close to the property line, and neighbors, you know, are feeling impacts. Backyards are generally setbacks. There's more room, more proximity, especially if you have a backyard to a backyard. So that's a consideration.
Well, I think you did an amazing amount of research on this and come up with great, seriously, examples. And I think it's actually looks like something that I would want to see us move forward on. And I think this also demonstrates how one person can get involved and change something for a good part of the town for the better. So thank you, and thank you, folks, for bringing this up front.
Councilmember Green, then Vice Mayor Barrett.
You've obviously thought about this and researched it in incredible depth, and this is way above my pay grade. What do you have for a recommendation? If we just ask you what we should do, what would you recommend for us?
So in a nutshell, the mayor is setting the 20,000 square foot as a break point and allowing 20,000 above for small animals, limited focus list as a permitted use under a certain number, with setting it up where you're restricted to have it in the backyard where there's more space, establish clear nuisance abatement procedures for zoning to take more of the responsibility so we're not burdening PD, and sharpening our large animal requirements. I think it's entirely appropriate to remove that from R17 and R110, the ability to have a cow. And also making sure that there are uniform caps. Right now we have a cap only on livestock quantities in R144. They should be in R1300 as well. So those are areas where we can improve. So that's the short version.
Thank you.
So,
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I have a few things, so I'll try to go fast. First of all, I'm really concerned about bees. Bees in Arizona are actually the number one deadliest animal. And I live near an area that frequently has beehives. And whenever there's a swarm coming through, I'm terrified to let my kids play in my yard. So I would really not appreciate it if my neighbor next door to me had bees. That would really limit the use of my property. I mean, I know there's going to be bees. There's bees around. But having them all live and be farmed right
just
next
not
to
next
me,
door.
It would not be something I would be interested in.
Understood.
And, I mean, I understand beekeeping in the area is beneficial, but I think it should be out in those more...
Larger lots.
Larger lots where there aren't as many people, kids, etc. And then pigs, similarly with the pot-bellied pigs, there's a famous... like one of the famous law school nuisance cases that kind of defined nuisance law that everyone in law school has to read is about pigs. And it's about, you know, neighbors who had pigs move in next to them. So I'm a little concerned about pigs due to the smell and things. I had a question about slaughtering animals. I mean, some of these animals, rabbits, et cetera, are being kept for meat or potentially chickens. I mean, do we allow people to slaughter animals on site at their house? How does that work?
That's an interesting consideration that I hadn't thought of. So that's something we have the ability to require processing off-site as part of a code stipulation. I'm sorry?
Some people process deer as they go hunting, process elk, and
yes, I honestly don't know enough about the topic. Yeah,
okay. Someone can look into maybe it, something so. to be worth sure. looking into. And then I have a question about the lot size and definition. So with the ESLO, we've had a number of lots where the houses are actually on pretty small graded lots, and they're all right next to each other. And then they go out long and skinny into a section of, say, wash or something that's environmentally sensitive protected land. And mm-hmm. I've seen subdivisions come before us where we say, this is a half-acre lot. And I've said, this is not a half-acre lot. This is a quarter-acre lot.
Right.
And they said, well, we don't care. You know, this is the developer wants to sell it as a half-acre lot, so they're dividing it so it's this long strip. So when we say it's going to be 20,000 square feet, 22,000, whatever, half acre, how are we counting that type of lot? Because those mm-hmm. homes that I've seen come through planning and zoning like that are not really half acre lots.
Right.
I mean, they're, you know, in the context of this type of code, they don't have a half an acre of usable space for animals. Mm-hmm. They still just have a regular neighborhood sized pad and yard.
Right, right.
That's an excellent point, and I hadn't thought about that. That's something we're going to have to take into consideration. So I can imagine there's definitely the ability to ensure there's language that 20,000 means 20,000 that you have control over.
Okay.
So
yeah, that doesn't have an easement
something
or something.
To think about, yeah.
Okay, and then I'm a little worried about animal hunting, and maybe this is unique to my area, but we have a ton of bobcats and coyotes. Like every night, the coyotes howling mm-hmm. and bobcats hopping in and out of people's yards with their cubs and all of that. And so I have a small dog, and I'm a little worried that if we have a bunch of chickens, we're training all the bobcats and the coyotes to hop into our yards to find food. And, you know, they already do that to some degree, not to mention the owls. So mm-hmm. I don't know, does that increase kind of the predators that we would see going to people's yards, eating chickens? That's a little bit of a concern for me.
So there's an unwritten requirement in Arizona that, particularly in southern Arizona, you need to keep your hens in a pen. 2 days ago, my wife was in the backyard. I live in the county. Working in the backyard within 25 yards of a hen grazing, and a bobcat came in, grabbed the hen, and left. So you can't keep your hens out. You can't free range.
Yeah.
So they need to be kept in a pen.
I have friends in Tucson that had chickens. All of them got eaten by a bobcat.
Yeah.
So I'm just a little worried about, you know, keeping the wildlife wild.
Right.
Not having a bunch of wildlife food in our yards and neighborhoods. So I don't. Anyway.
Yeah, and the idea of the code too is that the animals need to be in a pen, and it's unfortunately one of those things that's self-regulating.
Okay.
That sounds cruel, but it's true.
Okay, and then I guess finally, the comparison to dogs. So one of my concerns about this is any of us who read the constituent services summary, and certainly mm-hmm. our constituent services coordinator, know that somewhere around, I don't know, 10% or 20% of all complaints we get have something to do with dogs or questions or
right.
something, right? And so I think that our police department and our current staff and our enforcement spend a lot of time managing nuisance issues related to dogs. And I love dogs. I know the whole council loves dogs. So it's not an anti-dog thing, but I'm just concerned about adding to that already heavy load mm-hmm. and then now allowing something else. So I appreciate chickens and things, but I don't know, you know, I don't know enough about how much noise do goats make or how much smell is there. I just want to make sure that whatever those things are, instead of saying, well, it's less than a dog, so it should be allowed.
Sure.
I don't know that we want to add to the already heavy load that the town staff kind of bears on those types of issues.
Sure.
So, I'm wondering if I can ask our town manager. He had a, when I shared that concern with him in my conversation with him, he had a suggestion that I thought was a good one. So
actually, and if I may, we have stats on to answer your very inquiry that the OVBD did for us in the last 2 days.
How much was about dogs?
So, so Lieutenant Thomas, you want to come on up? He actually analyzed, they call them bark calls. We have bark stats. And also, Lieutenant checked in with, I believe it was Suarita and Morana, who have, I think, very aggressive permissions for small farm animals to see what change they saw in terms of bark plus calls. Please.
Yes.
Wow, this is a lot of work. Thank you, guys.
Yes, indeed. Mayor and Vice Mayor. We looked at the last almost 3 years now, starting from the beginning of 2021 up until about October 12th of 2023. And you can see the amount of barking dog calls. They usually come in as a disturbing the peace. We show up and it's a barking dog. 2021 showed about 70 barking dog calls, 54 in 2022, and then 29 up until this point in 2023. We do have a process for these barking dogs that we do follow that our community resource actually follows up with if it gets to the point where it needs to go into a prosecution of that dog or of that family. And then I did reach out to my counterparts at Sarita and Morana, specifically asking about issues surrounding small animals or small farm animals, like the ones we were looking at. And out of their memory, they could not recall any specific or significant issues that they have had to deal with. And that's at both of those agencies.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
But nevertheless, I wonder if our town manager, Mr. Wilkins, would you be willing to speak to your suggestion that I thought was a good one?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, if you look at the presentation, there's one jurisdiction, I think it was Mesa, that had an administrative process. In other areas, we call it a special use permit. And it's kind of in between a permit use or a CUP. A CUP, of course, coming all the way to the council. Permitted use wouldn't. So it'd be administrative approval process. And talk to staff, be a light effort on the front, similar to a permit, let's say like a fence permit, something, again, lighter on the applicant. They could then put at least a easy diagram of the location of the animals to make sure that they're following through with the setbacks. It allows us some education opportunities with the applicant. And then, so that's really it. It would be very, again, very light, probably a minimal fee. And then the other aspect of that, instead on the enforcement part, if you did have complaints, consistent complaints, it could be handled again through staff, through either violations, fines through staff, and then you could possibly pull the permit. So that the code could be written that way. That way you wouldn't have to go through numerous efforts to 30 days to comply, and then they comply, but then you get another complaint, 30 more days to comply, and then ultimately go to a judge. So I think what this was hopefully an effort to be easier on staff for enforcement and less, of course, on the police and less on the judicial system.
Yeah, so I think I would generally propose that we stick with that, and kind of like what Councilmember Solomon said regarding the 20,000 square foot lots. You know, we're trying this out. It's something different. If we want to change it in the future and say, hey, you know, we don't need special use permit anymore, we can go to permitted use. That's easier to do later than it is to do now up front once we've made it a permitted use. It's hard to go back to a special use permit. So anyway, I like that idea. I think when it's a permitted use, it is just such a long process to get a complaint resolved. And then also I like the idea where if you were applying for a special use permit, I think it should be simple. I think it should be cheap. I think it should be administrative. But it gives a chance for the person to be given materials to understand what the requirements are. Whereas right now, you know, we have people, they don't know what they don't know what our current code says, so they're moving forward, and how are they going to know what our next code says? You know, the newspaper says chickens are allowed or whatever, and okay, I got chickens. So the special use permit gives us a chance to, if someone's taking on those animals, you know, just not so much to try and regulate it, but even to try to educate it. And then if there are problems, it's an easier resolution. Sure. So I liked that suggestion.
Councilmember Solomon?
Done. Yeah. Did you? A few of the concerns as far as lot shapes, long and narrow lots have not been allowed for a long time. We actually have a length versus width requirement
right on
lots. So there may be some old lots like that, but you can't go in and develop a 50 by 1,000 foot lot or flag lot, which is another variation on that. And the other question is, you say you're concerned on a 20,000 square foot lot, how much space is available for the animals? Chickens don't take up a lot of space.
They don't.
They're going to be in a coop. If they're not, as mentioned, they're going to be dinner for a bobcat, and that's just life out here, just like a dog or a cat or something else. My other question about bees is, my understanding, and I could be wrong, is that the bees that beekeepers keep are honeybees. They're not the African killer bees. So if that's the case, then those bees don't pose a threat. And I don't even know if they tend to keep the other bees away or not. But before I would go and eliminate bees, I'd want more information on that, because it's almost like domesticated versus wild, I believe.
Yeah. So and if I may, Mayor, Member Solomon, we were actually, and as we missed in bringing this up in the presentation, Vice Mayor, that we were actually proposing a larger property size specific to bees of an acre.
Okay.
And that was recommended working with something bee association as a recommendation. So it should be a larger property at a minimum. And so whether or not an acre is enough or not, or it should be 3 acres, I mean, that's certainly a discussion.
Yes, I should remember that no matter what it is, there's an association and a publication regarding it. Thank you.
There is. And also, I just want to be clear, too, if I may, Mayor, Vice Mayor, on the special use permit, because there, a lot of folks use special use in a different in varying contexts and various jurisdictions. So what I'm understanding is that it's requiring a permit for, tell me if I've got this wrong, it's requiring a permit to have a small ag animal where we get to see a drawing and making sure you're meeting setbacks and whatnot, and there's a fee associated with that. The zoning enforcement process that was just described is the same as what we do now. So and that's, you know, we inspect the property and we have the ability to levy fines if they're not corrected within X number of days and using the court process. Our process is long because we do our best to give people time to voluntarily comply, so we're not entering fines. But we do use that when we have to. So if I'm understanding that correctly, I mean, that seems perfectly appropriate. So... great.
Councilmember Jones Ivey and then Councilmember Bowen.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My concern is, you're saying that there are other people within the community that have small animals with no permit. So how would we handle that? Even with who would be responsible for advising those people that they need a special use permit, excuse me?
So I think that's a great question. And one is, it is making an effort to get the word out in the community. There is a process where you can provide this. We do get calls. I'd estimate 1 to 2 a week, people asking about this ability. And we routinely say, either no, we don't have the opportunity because we don't have the space, or you have to go through this process. This is anecdotal. My estimation is that's the lot. They hang up the phone, they get a hen, and they go on and do it anyway because they're not going to deal with town hall because the rules are too onerous.
So how would we enforce something like that?
So it's, we now would have an opportunity to explain to these callers that there is a route for you to do this within standards.
Mr. Vella, isn't it complaint driven?
It's the back end of it is if a neighbor complains, we get with that property owner and here's the process, and you have X number of days to go through that process. Or go through the violation side of it. So, yeah. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Bowen.
We mentioned a special use permit, and we currently have conditional use permits. Can you share with me, with respect to neighbor notification and neighbor possible involvement in the granting of their permit, is there a difference between a special use permit and a conditional use permit? And if there is, what is it?
Great. Mayor Winfield, Member Vaughn, and that's why I asked for clarification on terminology, because some jurisdictions equate special use permit and conditional use permit as the same exact thing. Okay. Last jurisdiction I worked for, we didn't have conditional use permits. They were special use permits. They went to commission and council. So what we're talking about is, I mentioned Mesa has this administrative review process. Where it's staff discretion to require a permit. We do have the ability in that format to require notification to neighbors. In fact, we have one similar process today. If you want to and need to go just barely below your minimum property size or super close, it enables administrative review after notification to the neighbors, and we see if there's any reasonable protest. And then the planning and zoning administrator, which is my position, we can say yes or no, and that decision can get appealed to council. So it can be set up in that manner. And if we do set up in that manner, I would maybe think about what's the break point where it's worth it, all right? So if someone's asking for one or two chickens, maybe not worth it. Just a thought. I'm thinking off the cuff here. If it's a larger number, then yes. So there's a lot of latitude how that can be set up. So, hope that helps.
Okay, and I know hearing from the neighbors is not necessarily easy or fun, but I personally would always like to be able to tell a neighbor that there was an opportunity for you to, and I hate to think that we didn't ask them, because the applicant is always going to tell us one thing, and quite honestly, the neighbor may tell us something differently. And I'm just trying to get at that. Are we really giving them a chance? And you believe that we are. We're giving them a chance to provide input before the permit is granted.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yeah, I get concerned when we start requiring neighbor approvals, because now this is going to depend on where you live and your neighbors. We don't require neighbor approvals for someone to have six dogs. And I do like your analogy to the dogs. I think they are. I'm a dog lover, but I do agree that, let's face it, dogs with barking, with pooping, with digging holes and so on and so forth, getting out of a fence or a yard, yes, there could be an issue. So the difficulty with this is now your use of your property is dependent in this, whether you have two small chicks is whether all your neighbors agree or not.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it, a majority approval of the neighbors? And we get into the definition of, the notice to the neighbors. Is it a 300-foot level? And why is it that this person's allowed to have them because their neighbors don't object, but this person isn't because the neighbors object? So I just think that's a slippery slope. We don't want to get involved in on something of this small magnitude.
All right. So I have clear direction on this. Thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett, the game is over. Rangers won. We're okay.
Right. Well, I think what I was thinking of in terms of a special use permit was just sort of one step above permitted.
Yeah.
You know, just an administrative application, $20, $30, like pretty cheap. They receive a paper explaining the ordinances and off they go.
Right.
I mean, I think that's 100%. Kind of what I was in the realm of thinking. I don't know if that's right, but I think, you know, relatively simple, where someone calls you and says, yeah, hey, can we do this? And you can say, if your property meets this requirements, you can come in tomorrow and
sure,
pay $20 and receive your permit and out you go. Like,
sure.
But that way, you know, you have a record of who has them. You have the ability to revoke them if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just gives us a little bit more, and we have a chance to educate them. You
sure
know, here's the requirements. You got to put it in a pen. You got to be set back so far. These are how many you can have, whatever.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor? Yes.
Councilmember Solomon.
Agree. That's great. A simple application for all the reasons you just stated.
Yeah. That's workable. That's workable.
Key topic. Can we go to key topic two?
Would that apply to my hippopotamus, too?
Sorry, it's for Steve. Christmas. You want one for Christmas?
For Christmas. Christmas is coming up.
Okay, Mr. Buyer. So I'm in agreement with the 20,000, and what I understood from reading this is that basically anything under 20,000 is an HOA, and mm-hmm, this doesn't supersede HOAs. And the one complaint that I read, they were within an HOA, so this is not going to impact them. So the 20,000 makes a lot of sense to me, so I support that. Can we go to key topic three? Well, maybe it's the next one. So this gives these are our quantities. So to Savannah and Ben, you know, they made the point that nine, you know, an odd number for chickens doesn't work.
Mm.
So let's do an even number.
Okay. If I may, Mayor, I may throw out, there are feed stores that will sell you a single chicken.
You know, they're the chicken people. Do you have chickens?
Yes.
But I'm on a different side of town. I don't go to the same places they go.
And
so,
Mr. Mayor, are the number of rabbits when you first get them or a month later?
There's an Easter special. So
I'd like to raise you one chicken to 10.
Ted?
So I'm not glad to.
Why haven't you ever brought in fresh eggs to a council meeting?
So, Mayor, I do want to establish these numbers are very subjective in terms of the way we came up with them. We'd be glad to make them even. So,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, there's been concerns. I've heard concerns about the potbelly pigs and bees.
Okay.
So I would maybe moving the potbelly pigs to a larger, just as you've mentioned with the bees,
okay,
moving those to a larger lot size and say goodbye to your grass if you have grass and the potbelly pig is what I understand. I don't know that I have any other comments on this key topic three here. And then four, was there? Thanks. Yeah, no, I think the setbacks probably make sense for the 20,000 square foot and larger. If we were getting into smaller lots, you know, I could see it being problematic because you're just
sure
not going to have the room, right? Anyway, okay. And any other questions, direction? So, Ms. Chavez, nice. Savannah and Ben, any parting words?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
It sounds like we got some more chicken stores to check out.
There you go. Oh, yeah. You two guys talk here.
Tucson Feed Store.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vella. You've done an omen job here tonight with two back-to-back presentations. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And our study session is adjourned at 9:16. Good night, everyone. Let's go home and have some scrambled eggs.